I would say a sheer amparsha b'chukotai appears in Torah Tidbits 1000.
Yeah, right.
That I wrote. And you'll find out a lot of things there. You'll find out in that article in Torah Tidbits that tonight is my birthday. 59. And the Parashat of Chukotai was my bar mitzvah parasha. And I got bar mitzvah 2 weeks before the establishment of the State of Israel. So there were two major historic events within a period of 2 weeks. So the rest of that you can see in Torah Tidbits 1000. And you know, if in the Shiras are known, when they can be available yet, but here it is. It looks something like that. Very nice. Okay. But I want to talk about something else today. All related to this part of the year. It's related to this period of the year. And this is an idea that occurred to me about 10 years ago, and you know, I thought it was too radical. People are not going to buy it, and I don't know why I forgot about it. And then this year, I started thinking about it again, and I decided, you know what? I'm not afraid anymore. I'm going to say what's on my mind. We had already some months ago decided that we are in a stage of life that we describe as, what the heck? You know what? You might even like what I have to say. You might even like it. Number one is a famous Gemara in Yevamot. Very famous Gemara. Gemara says, Shnim osar elav zugim tamidim hoyula l'Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of students. Mi Gevat ad Antiparas. From Gevat. Gevat and Antiparas are two geographic locations, and there's all sorts of discussion where it is, but it seems it's across the Galil. Gevet may be someplace near Akko, and Tipris, another place. So along the Galil, the Kulam made to a Perek Echad, and all of them died during one period of time. Because they did not treat each other with respect. So 24,000 students, 12,000 pairs of students died during this period of time. And that's of course why the Omer period is the period of the counting of the Omer, which is a mitzvah min HaTorah, is also a period of semi-mourning because of the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva. Olam Shamein, and the world was left barren of Torah. Until Rabbi Akiva came to our rabbis in the south, and he taught them Torah. And who were these? They were Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Lozar ben Shemua. The Rabbi Shimon over here is Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai was a student of Rabbi Akiva. Tana, the Gemara goes on to tell us, Kulam meitu mipesach v'atzeret. All of the students of Rabbi Akiva died from Pesach until Atzeret. Atzeret is Shuas, this period of the year. On Rabbi Chama bar Abba said, Vitema. Others say that it was Rav Chiya bar Avin who said, Kulam meitu mitorah. They all died an ugly death. Maihi, what death was it? On Rav Nachman says it was Askara is some kind of an illness, it seems, that cuts off the air or respiration, respiratory illness. Okay, that's it. this Gemara has troubled me literally for years. For years! No, what I did over here was, I wrote in, was it number three? I wrote all the questions, everything that bothers me with this Gemara. Everybody knows the Gemara. There's been so much Torah that's been written about this Gemara. The 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva that died from Pesach to Shavuos because they didn't treat each other with respect. The following are my questions. A. All 24,000 committed the same sin. There wasn't one single solitary soul of a student that wasn't making this avodah. What? In Yiddish, one would say, "Es leitzach nicht auf dem Seichel." It doesn't make sense. 24,000 sinners, and they all choose the same sin. B. And all of them died in the same period. Isn't that interesting? God decides to kill 24,000 students between Pesach and Shavuos because they didn't act with respect toward one another. By the way, my third question is this a sin that's punishable by death? Is there any place in all of Torah where it says that if you don't respect your friend, then you die? And not some die, you die mitzvah, a bad death. The biggest question, most probably, is D, number four. For 24,000 sinners who God strike down, we mourn? We mourn? What's the avelis? Why do we have to mourn for 24,000 people who, it seems, according to the Gemara, got precisely what they deserve? I think that they may have gotten a lot more than they deserve. So what are we mourning about? These fellows didn't respect one another. Finish! We got rid of them and that's all. And the world is a better place. Let me just get a little feeling. Just shake your head. Am I asking Gita Kashis? These good questions. Okay. Let's see a little more action up here. These are good questions. Yeah, these are very good questions. Number five. The great message that Rabbi Akiva gave to the world was Zeh Klal Gadol B'Torah. The great rule in Torah. V'yohavto l'reyacho kamocha. That was the Rebbe's motto. That's what Rabbi Akiva stood for. That was his great message to Klal Yisrael. V'yohavto l'reyacho kamocha. And his 24,000 students never learned that lesson from him. Okay. Let's go further. Are we to assume that Rabbi Akiva, who was the greatest of the Tanoim, about whom the Gemara says in Menachot that God showed Moshe Rabbeinu all the generations that were to come, and he showed him Rabbi Akiva, and God said, you know, if not for you, Moshe, I would have given Torah through Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva turns out to have been the greatest failure in Jewish education in all of history. An abject failure. I felt good this morning, just a little while ago. Where she's sitting now, she says, I inspired her 2 weeks ago by something she said, and she wrote a letter to the Jerusalem Post on the inspiration that I gave her, and they printed it. I'm a success. Odysseus. And Rabbi Akiva failed with 24,000 students. I don't get it. Maybe another problem. Why doesn't the Gemara say that 24,000 students? Why does the Gemara say 12,000 pairs of students? I mean, true, the Gemara understood that we can all times 2. 12,000 times 2 equals 24,000. But why did the Gemara use the terminology of 12,000 pairs of students? I think that's the sum total of the questions. And if I want to really sum up the questions, I don't understand the Gemara. Everybody talks about the Gemara, everybody writes about the Gemara, everybody has come up with all sorts of chuckles throughout history about this Gemara. They didn't really respect one. I don't understand. Therefore, you think about something for a few years, finally you come to something. I think that the Gemara here is using a code. And the Gemara is known in many places to use codes. They say one thing, but they mean something else. And what you have to do is know how to break the code. And I think that in a moment of inspiration, I may have... No. I broke the code. I did it. I know people will call me all sorts of names, but we said already, what the heck? I didn't tell you pshat. And for the pshat, we have to go to another Gemara, number 2. Now, here I may be getting a little spooky, and you know I don't like to be spooky. But the Gemara, which tells us the story, the first Gemara, the story of the 24,000 students appears in Masechet Yevamot, Samach Beis, 62. I'm taking you further in Shas to Bava Metzia, Daf, you got it, 62. And listen to what the Gemara says there. Rebbe Yochanan, the Gemara asks, hi, this pasuk of your brother shall live with you. That's a pasuk in last week's Seder in Parshat Bahar. The Gemara, somebody in the Gemara had used it for a particular purpose, and now the Gemara is, what does he do with that pasuk? Listen, unbelievable Gemara, beautiful Gemara. Miboyle l'kidatanya, he needs the pasuk of v'chei ochicha imach. As we learned in the following brisa, Shnayim Shavim Mahalchim Baderech, classic ethical question, moral question. Two people are traveling on the road. One of them has water, and the water that he has is enough to take him safely out of the desert. But his friend is going to die. What is his responsibility? Is his responsibility to himself? I have the water. I'm going out. If he shares the water with his friend, they'll both die. Both will die. So the Gemara says the following: Shnayim shalim mahalchem b'derech. Two people are traveling along the way. Ubiyad echad mehen kitom shalmayim, and one has in his hand a canteen or a flask of water. Im shotim shnayhem mehen. If both will drink, they both die. Because there isn't enough water to get the two of them out of the desert. Vim shoteh chavnehen, if one drinks, the one who has the water is going to drink. Magia l'yishuv, he will be able to make his way to an inhabited place, a settlement where water is available. Doraj ben Keturah. That's the question that the Gemara has set up. Doraj ben Keturah, fellow by the name of ben Keturah, said, Mutav sheyishtu shneyem veyamutu. It's best that both of them, they divide the water, both of them drink, both of them die, v'al yireh echot mehem v'mitato shel chavero. And one shall not see the death of his friend. Both drink, both die. Ad shevor Rabbi Akiva v'limei, until Rabbi Akiva came and he taught, v'chei ochicha imach, this pasuk in Parshat Bahar, your brother shall live with you, chayecha kodmin l'chayei chavercha. Your brother is supposed to live with you. It means when there's a clash between my life and his life, chayecha, your life comes, I come before him. I come before him. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva is saying, you have the water, you have no obligation whatsoever to share it with the other. He'll die in the desert. You make your way out until you reach a place with his water. End of Gemara. Your brother shall live with you, but you come first. I want to tell you what I believe is the pshat of the Gemara of the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva, or the 12,000 peers of students. I don't have to go into the proofs, that are so many proofs that they did not die of a plague, they died in battle against Rome. Rabbi Akiva was the architect, the author, the commander, the one who planned the revolt against Rome. Bar Kokhba, he said, Bar Kokhba is Mashiach. Israel was no longer able to live under the heel of Rome. And they rebelled. Rabbi Akiva was the father of rebellion. Let me take you to number four. The Haggadah, you all recognize this from the Haggadah. Nice story is told of Rabbi Elezer and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, Sheyiru Hagim Subud b'Bnei Brak. How many are there? Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. All right, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. And Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah. Five of them. One, two, three, four, five. They were all celebrating the Seder in B'nai Brak. And they were relating the story of the exodus from Egypt that whole night. At Shabbat Tamidei, until their students came and told them, Rabbeinu, our rabbis, Higi Azman, Kriyash Mashal Shach, was the time to read Shema in the morning has arrived. So now, let's leave aside all of the students telling their Rabbein. This is a serious, serious Gemara. Very serious Gemara. And there are a lot of problems with the Gemara. The problems really boil down to the following. The only one who lived in B'nai Brak was Rabbi Akiva. All the rest lived in different places in Eretz Yisrael. One of them, Rabbi Elazar, happens to be of the opinion that one is not permitted to leave his own Manyantiv, and he lived in Lod. What's he doing in B'nai Brak? Where's Rabbi Tarfon, I think, was up in the Galil. They were from all over the country. And they're at this Seder. This Seder. So we will read in a moment, we will read a paragraph from Rav Soloveitchik. Maybe we'll see it right now. We'll look at the bottom of the page. Magidim have a beautiful interpretation to this paragraph. Magidim, it means the bottom of the first page. The bottom of number four. It's Magidim, Darshanim, sermonizers. That's not sermonizers. There's a lot of proof in Shas and in history that the students of Rabbi Akiva died in battle. Margidim had a beautiful interpretation in this paragraph. They say this refers to the Pesach that preceded the outbreak of the insurrection on the part of Bar Kokhba against Rome. They would talk of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, but it was not only the story of the past. The point that the Rav of Soloveitchik wanted to make was, and we've done this for years now, the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim cannot be something that is focused only on the past. We have to bring it up to date, to now, to 2012, 5,772. If we only deal with the past, we have not really fulfilled the mitzvah. Behold, Dor v'dor, on the Malay Lachalotain, with every generation they rise against us to destroy us. That's what we say in the Haggadah. Behold, Dor v'dor, in every generation, Chayav on the Mudok, that this person is supposed to see himself as own. He went out of Egypt. It has to be related to the now, the present. So therefore the Rav says, they would talk of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, but it was not only the story of the past, what happened to Pharaoh and us so many thousand years ago, it was the story of the present and what was going to happen tomorrow. The study of the Exodus was supposed to guide them in their revolt. They would talk of Yitzhak Mitzrayim all night, was a long night, and the Bar Kokhba revolt was planned at that Seder night. The long night that we're talking about was the long night of suffering under Rome. And they planned the revolt at that Seder. And the Seder was the cover for all of them being in Bnei Brak. Otherwise, everybody would, why are all these great rabbis coming here? Well, it's the Seder, you know, people go for the Seder. But no, they were planning the revolt. They studied Yitzhak Mitzrayim not only as an event of the past, but also as a clue and a key to the future. I'm going to continue and explain the rest of the meaning of this story. Who was going to go out to fight? It wasn't Rabbi Akiva, Rav Tarfon, and Rav Elazar, and Azariah and the others. They were not the ones who were going to go out to fight. It all depended on the students. Are you ready to take up arms against Rome? That was the question during that Seder that was presented to the students. And when they came and they gave their response was a code. Doesn't really mean a ready, you know, you're going to be against my creation right away, you better say it. No. The code is the following. The time for Kriyat Shema of the morning has arrived. Kriyat Shema means that we accept upon ourselves the yoke of God and no other yoke. We're going to cast off the yoke of Rome. That was the point. It was a code. They're not telling them, these five great rabbis don't know about Zman Kriyat Shema. They know about Zman Kriyat Shema. They're telling them the time has come and we're ready and we're going out to battle. Next step. There's another code. The other code is the code of Lo Nahagu Kavod Zeh Bazeh. And I'm telling you how I read it. Spent a lot of time thinking about this. If two people are in a desert and one has water and the other doesn't, what happens if I decide that I'm going to share my water with the other fellow? Or, let's take first, I decide not to share my water. You know what happens if I decide not to share my water? I'm following Rabbi Akiva, who said, "V'chei ochicha ima." I come first. To be nohe kavod means when I say chabibi, I know the dire straits you're in, but I come first. Chayecha kol lechayecha bercha. You're going to die at thirst, not me. One Lagum Kavod's Epizeh in the code that I see is when somebody, and especially a student of Rabbi Akiva, despite the fact that their Rebbe said, you come first, when they went out to war against the Romans, they never said, I come first. If their Chavrus fell in battle, stayed with him to the very end, and both died together. The students passing, not like their Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, and they were certain that Rabbi Akiva would agree. You can go ahead and say, my life comes before my friend, when it's a struggle of only two people. But when it's a struggle for all of Klal Yisrael, Nelsiri, then you know what? We stand side by side, and if necessary, we fall together in battle. The Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva stood side by side, shoulder to shoulder, fought against the powerful legions of Rome. Remember, for 2.5 years, Bar Kokhba captured Yerushalayim, began a Jewish state, until Rome began bringing in its legions from as far away as England. They brought legions after legions. But then at the end, there was no way for Bar Kokhba's forces to stand up against it. Do you know what I'm learning, Pshat? You know what happened to these 24,000? And you know what? The Gemara gives us a hint as to where to look. The Gemara gives us a hint when the Gemara says 12,000 pairs of students. 12,000 pairs of students. The Gemara is saying, you know how you have to look at these Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva? Shnayim, Shoyu Mahalchum Baderech. This is the great code. Look at them as two who are going on the road. Either one dies or both die. And you know what they did? If their Chavrusa went down in battle, they stayed with them to the very end. These were the great Mikatshe Shem Shamayim of all time. That's why we mourn. We don't mourn for people who didn't act with respect to one another. The Gemara is telling us that these 24,000 students were Hane'ehovim v'Hane'imim v'Chayim u'b'motam lo nifradu. They were the ones who were pleasant and beloved in their lifetime, and even in death they were not separated. They died together on the field of battle, fighting for clothes. Is this reason to mourn? It sure is reason to mourn. Now I know you must probably never heard anything of the sort, and you must probably be thinking, you know, this guy. No, you're not thinking that. You have to let this get into you, Neshama. I'm going to take the chance of saying I believe that there's a tremendous amount of truth to what I'm saying. Because what I'm saying, I'm answering all of the questions that I ask. Rabbi Akiva was not the greatest failure, he was the greatest success. You know what his students did before him? Exactly what Rabbi Akiva did in his last moment. Rabbi Akiva, life ended with what? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Rabbi Akiva taught them, Kol Yomai, all of my life. I was waiting for the moment that this would come, when I would be able to give my life, saying Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. You know what he's saying? Higi Azman Kriyat Shema Yisrael Shachris. That's what we're talking about. And everything points in the direction of this pshat. The worst that I can be accused of is the rest of the world doesn't say it. But you know what happens? There's one big difference between me and the rest of the world. I am coming to the defense of these kedoshim. I'm not condemning them. There can't be anything better than taking 24,000 Jews who gave their lives for Clemenceau and raising them to the level of greatness and sanctity that they deserve. That's how I learned Shabbat. Lo nagu kavod ze beze, in their relationship with one another, not they didn't respect each other. They didn't conduct themselves with the idea of kavod, that I come first. No, 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 I don't come first. We both stand together. We live together, we die together. We fight side by side. I think that answers all of the...
No, it doesn't answer C. Is their sin punishable by death? What was their sin?
We're not talking about sin. We're talking about war. And in war, people die. Not sin. The 23,000 Israeli soldiers who died since HaKamas HaMedina, were they sinners? In war, people died. They didn't die in a plague because they didn't respect one another. People died in battle. People died in battle. That's what the, who was it? Was it Avner Ben Ner who said to Yoav Ben Tzruya, he said, Kacha v'kacha, tochal achera, the sword consumes. Of course, they were not. These are Kedoshi Yenyo. Of course, they are Kedoshi Yenyo. There was no sin.
I didn't ask the question, Rabbi Gold, you asked.
Yes, I'm saying people die without sin. Did 6 million Jews die because of sin? No, they didn't die because of sin. People go off to war. Am I supposed to say that all the 23,000 who died because of sin? I'm saying no, they didn't die because of sin. They died in battle, Lamar Am Yisrael, the Eretz Yisrael. So what? I didn't answer my question because he answered my question. Yes.
Why gave them a sin?
Their
sin punishable by death.
Is their sin? Let me teach you English. Is their sin, according to the way the Gemara in Yevamah says that their sin was shalom nagu kavod v'zeh v'zeh, is that punishable by death? But I'm saying that there wasn't a sin altogether.
Okay.
That's what that was my answer. There is no sin. This is a rare moment at which I permit people to ask questions, but just keep it short to the point. Yes.
Why is this downplayed so much? We've heard it before. Why is it downplayed? Why isn't it taught as you're teaching it? Okay.
Well, I can't tell you why it isn't taught as I'm teaching it, because I'm the first one that taught it. But I know I haven't seen anybody that says it. Okay? Wait a minute, wait, if I can change, I'm sorry, you have to wait. Yes?
It was hidden, number one, because they lost the war. And they don't want to discover other people who want to go. And secondly, I think the code that the students used meant we are ready to die and say Shema when we die.
You can say that too, that's fine. Yes. We're ready to die on Kiddush Hashem because we learned from our Rebbe who said, Kol Yom I Ha'Nisim Mitzar Al-Fasik Zeh. And yes, it was written in code as many other things. There are hundreds of Gemaras that were codes that were not written clearly for a number of reasons. Here the reason was, it was still under Rome. This was all, in a sense, hidden, but I can go on for months teaching you Gemaras that are all codes. Wait a minute. Go ahead.
If we are mourning for all those yeshiva students, when something like Kendall, and when does the sphere start, right?
What?
On the first day of Pesach. When we count, we start counting sphere. Sphere is not...
Has nothing to do with this.
So they took the sphere as a mourning period?
No. The mourning period is... has nothing to do with the Sphira. These are two separate things. Sphira, counting Sphira is a mitzvah, the same in our Torah. We have to count 49 days from Pesach to Shavuot. It just so happened, by the way, there's something else that just so happened. During this period, the Crusades destroyed hundreds of thousands of Jews in hundreds of communities in the Rhineland and in France. Such that the pshat that the Crusades came because of the Omer. It happened in that period of time.
Okay. So the sphere. We're not allowing any weddings, but after like Baumer, what is this period?
Yeah, well, the mourning period is that we don't make weddings.
The mourning? Sure.
That's
I want to know what's the definition, what's the mourning period?
So there are two minhagim. There are those who have this mourning period from Pesach straight until like Bomer, and those from Rosh Chodesh here to like Bomer, and from like Bomer to Shavuos. That's different minhagim and different, but that mourning period was because of the students of Rabbi Akiva.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Yes.
Is it possible to suggest the fact that the mourning period is that we are mourning for the fact that the students didn't listen to Rabbi Akiva?
Did not listen
to the dicta of Rabbi Akiva? Because if you look at Rabbi Akiva's words, it seems to suggest, I think, that the converse, if you don't follow Rabbi Akiva's position, you effectively are committing suicide, which is an aveira. Now, in military terms, doing what the Talmidim did, although it's tremendous bravado, at the end of the day, what they effectively did was halve their military strength.
No, sorry. They didn't commit suicide. They fought bravely until the end. I'm not saying that they threw their lives away. But they said that they understood that their Rebbe, under the circumstances where Klai Yisrael is being crushed by Rome, you have to go out and fight. Their Rebbe agreed. Their Rebbe sent them out to battle. Yedidi, their Rebbe sent them out to battle.
And that's why you didn't hear this explanation today in our time.
This is a very, very serious issue. It's very serious. I'm saying things that are, Mamish, this is my Neshomer. I was mechadish something here that I think is Torah sentence. If anybody has a good question, I'm ready to listen.
I've heard the same thing by another rabbi who tells us the exact same thing, that this is not a known thing. But exactly what you said, he said the exact same thing is two Shabbos of the
God. That's wonderful. I say here publicly, I never heard it from anybody else. But you know what? Sometimes there are ideas that come down from heaven.
A young rabbi,
then most probably once it was revealed to me from heaven, then he was able to pick it up. All right, this is it. Okay, and I've been very generous. I've been very generous. Now I'm just going to let Ken. Can you move a little closer here? Let everybody see who Ken Lerner is.
So the question in my mind is, let's take the example of Hanukkah. Because here we have a military battle, and we have a victory, and a celebration. The question in my mind is, let's say those Jews did fight, and they were victorious over the many. The question is, why was this different? Where was the problem? In other words, it could have been a victory. So where is that problem that it wasn't?
So let me tell you, first of all, the Rambam says that Rabbi Akiva and all the wise men of his generation were convinced that Bar Kokhba is Mashiach. Ella, the Rambam says, Shegoram Hachet, there was a sin for which reason that did not happen. We don't know. There is a Yerushalmi that says that there were certain statements that were made by Bar Kokhba that, in a sense, he was saying to God, listen, just don't let us do the job in the field of battle. Something of that sort. But that doesn't interest me to go ahead and find what their sin was. I'm not good at finding sins by Klal Yisrael. I happen to be very good in finding schusim. I just took 24,000 students who everybody thought were a bunch of sinners, and lo naku kovet zevetzeh. And I think I did a great time. I think Rabbi Akiva felt me for joy. But I don't know what the sin was. Do we know why there were defeats in history? Why Klal Yisrael was defeated? Do we know why Klal Yisrael suffered? What do we know? We don't know a thing. Do we know Mori HaShoah?
We don't know!
So I can't answer that. All that I'm saying is, I have said my piece, and I'm going to leave it at that, and we're going to continue, because there's a second half of this year. I didn't expect to do too much of the second half, but it's all right, I'm speaking three times this week. This is one. And I don't think I'm going to repeat what I said here. I don't think I'm going to repeat it. Tomorrow night there's a Le'elah program in me tomorrow night. I'm also going to speak about Rabbi Akiva. And if you happen to be in Be'er Sheva Thursday night, I think I'm going to be speaking about Rabbi Akiva then too. Yes?
I think if they had won this war, people would have assumed that Bar Kokhba was the Mashiach. If they had won the battle, then people would have assumed that Bar Kokhba was the Mashiach.
He did win. He conquered Yerushalayim. He established a state.
Yeah.
There are coins, Rabbi Akiva coins, and then something started 2.5 years later. But it was the last great attempt until 1948. Until 1948. What's it? May 14th or May 15th? 15th. The Eyes of May. The Gaish Day, who cares? I'm going to try and do a second section on Rabbi Akiva.
Okay.
I don't know how much I'll get done, but just... Alright, everybody, you can calm down now. You can calm down now. You know, number five, is it five or is it six? What is it? Five is the Gemara at the end of Masechet Makot. It's good that, first of all, the Gemara is beautiful. So if all we do is learn the Gemara, it's also okay. There's always next week and there's next year. Okay. And second of all, most probably at the... next time you come to a bar mitzvah and the bar mitzvah boy is making a seal on a masechet, and chances are it may very well be masechet makot that has only 24 blat gemara. So if you listen to me carefully, you'll just be able to sit at the table and impress your friends. Oh, the bar mitzvah boy is going to tell us a story of Rabbi Akiva, copy your stuff, and maybe you'll even be able to quote some classic sense of it. You will really, really impress all of your friends at the table. See, here is the Gemara at the end of Makot. There are two stories in the Gemara. And this is fascinating, you'll see. I mean, move with a little speed and alacrity. Ukvar hoya rabbi Gamliel, rabbi Elozer, rabbi Ansari, rabbi Yeshua, rabbi Akiva, mahalchim baderech. These great rabbis were all going on the road. Here we have not only Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah and Rabbi Yeshua, who are in the other two Gemaras, but now we also have Rabbi Gamliel and the Shomu Kol Hamona Shel Romi. Mi Palto, they heard the sound of the Roman crowds in the plaza of Rome. They heard Rome. This is after the Korban HaBayit. Rome had destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, and they hear the sounds of life, tumultuous, in the middle of Rome. Berichok Meres, they knew 120 miles away, you were able to hear it. They tchilu broken, and they started to weep. Rabbi Akiva Mesachek, but Rabbi Akiva was smiling. Omnilo, so they asked him, Mitnematom Mesachek, why are you smiling? Omnilhem Ba'atem, Mitnematem Ba'atem. So Rabbi Akiva asked the question then, and why are you crying? Omnilo, so they said to him, Alolu kushim shemishtachavim la'atsavim, umikatrim la'vodas kechavim yoshim betach vashkei, these heathens who bow down to idols and burn incense to idolatry and live in security and in calm, and all that in joy. The Eino Vo'onu, and we, Beit Habdom Narglei Elokeinu Saruf, we, the temple which is the footstool of our God, God's place on the face of this earth, is destroyed. We shouldn't be crying. V'anu beit hadom rakli elokim saruf be'ech v'lo nifkeh, we shouldn't cry. So then Rabbi Akiva explained why he was smiling Allah, and he said, Lakachani Ritzachay, that's why I'm smiling. Ma'ala Ovrei Ritzor Akach, if this is what God does for those who sin against them, La'osei Ritzono Alachat Kama Lakama, those who do His will, He will certainly reward us with peace, with security, prosperity, someday. Shuv Harach was the second story. And this story is the one that ends the Masechta. Shuv Harach was how we all in Yerushalayim. These rabbis were walking again, and this time they were on their way to Yerushalayim. They were coming from the east. Kivun Shehikiu L'Harach Sofim, when they came to Mount Scopus, Karu Bigdayim, they saw the Churban from Harach Sofim. It's called Harach Sofim Scopus because you can see from there. They tore clear. They saw the Churban Abayim. They continued eastward and they arrived at the Temple Mount. They saw a fox that came out of the Kodesh HaKodashim. And they began to cry. Rabbi Akiva Mitzachik and Rabbi Akiva smiled. Amrullah, they said to him, same thing. Why are you laughing? And he says back to them, why are you crying? So they said to him, Makom Shekatufo, the place where it says about it, V'hazor HaKorei Yumot, the stranger, the non-Kohen Gadol who goes to that spot, shall die. And now, Shu'olim Hilchupo, there are foxes going through there, V'lo Nifkeh, it's so desecrated. This holiest of holies. On all hands, Rabbi Akiva responded to them, and he said, that's why I left. The fit because it says, Apostle Yeshayahu, I will summon trustworthy witnesses to testify before me. The prophets Uriah and Zechariah ben Yerevko, the two of them. What is Yeshayahu? Yeshayahu, what's he putting? Two prophets who lived in completely different periods. What are they doing together in the same passage? V'chimayinyan Uriah Eitzel Zechariah. Uriah B'mikdash Rishon. U'Zechariah B'mikdash Sheni. Uriah was a prophet during the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, and Zechariah is one of the last of the prophets, and he is at Mikdash Sheni, the second Beit HaMikdash. Ella, you know what the Pasuk is saying, you know what Pasuk Yeshayahu is saying? That the two are interconnected and interrelated. Tola HaKosov, Nevuato Shel Zechariah, Nevuato Shel Uriah. The Pasuk made the prophecy of Zechariah dependent on the prophecy of Uriah. But Uriah said, what was it that Uriah said? Uriah described the utter destruction of Yerushalayim. He said, Lachem, therefore, Biglalchem, because of you, Tzion Sodet Techoresh, Zion is going to be plowed under like a field. What was Zechariah's prophecy? And Zechariah says the great psukim, Olam Yeshu Zekenim Uzekenod, the elderly will sit in the streets of Yerushalayim. Children are going to play in the streets. So he says, Rabbi Akiva concludes, Absalom in Kaiman of Watosha Uriah, before Uriah's prophecy was fulfilled, I was not sure what would be with the prophecy of Zechariah. But when I saw that the prophecy of Uriah was fulfilled so exactly, the utter destruction of Harabayit and Yerushalayim, then I am absolutely confident that someday the prophecy of Zechariah will also be fulfilled. Actually, it's coming to Atosha Lubia, even if Yareya was afraid, Shalot is Kayeni, Atosha Zechariah, that Zechariah's Nevuah will not be fulfilled. Akshav, now that the Nevuah of Uriah, the absolute destruction of Yerushalayim, has been fulfilled, but Yadua, and the Akiva tells them, I am certain absolute certainty that the nevuah of Zechariah is going to be fulfilled. This is the last line of the Gemara. These are precisely the words that they said to him. Akiva nichamtanu. Akiva nichamtanu. Akiva, you have comforted us. Akiva, you have comforted us. I made a call on Sunday to Rabbi Yaakov Shapiro, the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkez Harav. I think we're friends. Some years ago, he had told me something that somebody in his family said about this Gemara, and I called him up and he said, "If Yaakov, do you remember what you said to him?" Yeah, he remembered. I think somebody in the family had asked the question, after the first story, why didn't the rabbi say, "Arkiva nichamtanu, arkiva nichamtanu"? Arkiva, you console us. They don't say that until after the second story. So he says that somebody else in the family answered the following. In response to the first smiling of Rabbi Akiva, he said something that was he saw was logical. That if God gives such greatness to the Romans who are idolaters and heathens, can you imagine what he's going to do for us? Okay, they heard it. But when he quoted a pasuk from a Navi, "Oh, Yeshu Zakenu Zakenu for the Chavaku Mishalayim," a pasuk, then they said, "Akiva Nichamtanu, Akiva Nichamtanu." This Gemara is very fascinating for many, many reasons. And one of the reasons is, you know, I get into my discussions with people, you know. How many people out there who've learned the Sefer Markus and can tell you over the Gemara? How many of them are capable of picking up their eyes and looking around and saying, "You know what? Hodel Hashem ki tov." Exactly what Rabbi Akiva saw then in the midst of destruction, exactly as he understood so clearly the pasuk in Zechariah, we live it, we see it, it's here. I was speaking to a number of people, I will not describe them, but I said, "Take a look at me, Zakeni, the elderly in the streets of Yerushalayim." I took them into the street and I said, "You see the kingdom of
children.
That's what Rabbi Akiva saw then. And we're saying to him now." I came to Shia today very, very upset. I was fit to be tied. Wait a minute. You should have known. I wasn't going to say this, so I'm going to say it now. I didn't mention the Jerusalem Post in this year, did I? You can't go through a whole shoot without the Jerusalem Post. So here it is in the Jerusalem Post this morning, Daf 16. There's an article, I'm only going to read one sentence. Why Haredim should not be Zionists. There's I'll say how I feel. You know, I'm saying how I feel. All sorts of nonsense. But sometimes people can couch their nonsense in all sorts of strange ways. It may even sound intelligent to some people. Okay. And then you know what? A person can give himself away with one word. In one word, you see exactly what's wrong with everything he's saying. I want to read to you one sentence in this article by Martin Stern. He's a retired lecturer in mathematics at the Manchester Metropolitan University. Okay. Such inflexibility on the part, he's talking at this point about the army, that they will not permit the soldiers to put earplugs in their ears when women are singing. All right. Such inflexibility is one reason why Haredim, by and large, are not willing to serve in the ranks of the IDF. That's absolute nonsense. They never wanted to. They don't want to. It's not because of earplug or no earplug. Give me a break. That's why, because of earplugs 64 years ago, they decided that they knew that 64 years later, the soldiers will not be allowed to use earplugs when girls are singing. Give me a break, you know. I wasn't born yesterday. Listen to the next sentence. It also explains why they are so ambivalent when it comes to secular celebrations such as Israel's Memorial Day, Israel's Independence Day, or Jerusalem Day, and why no prayers were said for the state or on behalf of the IDF soldiers in their circles. I read this. One word. Honoring the memory of 23,000 is secular? Thanking the Rebbeinu for giving us a state and giving us Eretz Yisrael, that's a secular celebration? Since Bar Kocha, the Rebbeinu gives Yerushalayim to Klal Yisrael, I know Yerushalayim, that's a secular celebration? You gotta be sick! No akos atov, no thankfuls, not to God, not to 23,000 soldiers and their families. They died so you can sit and learn. And look at peace over here, secular. That's the problem with it all. That's where that hashkafa falls. It's a disgrace. Secular. They should be saying, this guy Martin Stern should be saying hello with a bracha on Sunday. For that matter, he should say it every day. I'm going to be saying hello with a bracha. We all will. Secular celebration. And that's why you can't pray for the state of Israel. Is he out of his cotton pick in mind? The guy's mad. And he, by the way, he's a frequent contributor to both the Jewish and general press worldwide. Worldwide. This nonsense, this shtus, this hevel, this shekel is going to be worldwide. Now, you know who's going to be on trial now? When they get my letter, the Jerusalem Post is going to be on trial. So you see, you know what this fellow doesn't see? He doesn't see the elderly in the streets of Yerushalayim. He doesn't see children playing in the streets. You know what he doesn't see? He doesn't see the fulfillment of those great prophecies that we're zeichet to see before our very eyes. It's unbelievable. People can be blind to what's going on in the street. They can be blind. How many times have I told you when the Ramban arrived in Yerushalayim in 1267, you should be able to answer this in your sleep. How many Jews were living in Yerushalayim in 1267? Two. Two.
Two.
How many Jews were living in Yerushalayim when Rabbi Vagini Bar Tzurah arrived in 1488? 200. How many Jews were in Yerushalayim when Rabbi Yehuda Chosid arrived in the year 1700? 5,000. 5,000. How many Jews were in Yerushalayim when gold arrived in 1955? 146,000. There are now half a million Jews in Yerushalayim. That's not the Rebbeinu Shel Olam working overtime? Unbelievable. Zeh Hayom Osa Hashem Nogila V'Nizuchot. Everybody, sit down. Esther, please come here.
I am coming.
This lady wants to speak to you for 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. I happen to have the cover of being Rabbi Goldsmith Lieutenant. And I have a little quote.
2 minutes.
So, yes, okay. I am asking you for something for a crisis. This is a family that lives here in Eretz Yisrael, of course, that are in financial crisis like so many others. But there's one difference. They, number one, they are doing everything possible to help themselves. I know them for a long time, and I've been helping them. But now they have such a terrible turn of events that the woman, without realizing what she was getting into, went and borrowed 3,000 shekel from the gray market. Now, if you don't know what the gray market is, it is not anything to do with the black market. It is simply a bunch of woodlands, thieves, and worse, who prey on the poor.